Entrepreneur Circle is an On Air Brands production and a proud member of the On Air Brands Network.
Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Entrepreneur Circle, Eric Cabral.
On this episode,
our favorite is seller financing. And so in this model, the seller then becomes the bank. So we put a down payment on, and then every month we're making payments to him, both principal and interest. And in this model, everything is negotiable. You know, we'll kind of go through them, what the benefits to them are, right? Number one is they could get a higher price, right, than the bank would approve, because the bank's got to look at, you know, historical performance and debt coverage ratios and all these things. And, you know, maybe we are willing to pay a higher price because we know there's this good potential versus what the bank thinks that it's, you know, worth. Number two, it could be unprofitable, right? The thing could make no money. And it's the only way that the seller can sell it, because no bank is going to loan you money on something that doesn't make any money.
You have now entered the Entrepreneur Circle.
Hey there, folks, and welcome back to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. My goal is to inspire you by chatting with entrepreneurs about their successes, their failures in life and in business. I am your most humbled host, Eric Cabral, a real estate investor, a creative, and I've been in the creative industry for over 20 years. Got my start in New York City as a junior art director, made my way to the top of the corporate ladder, and realized there was the proverbial glass ceiling. So I hung up my corporate hat and started my own creative agency called On Air Brands, where we broadcast your brand and your message using podcasts and social media marketing, along with the help of my other company, PodMax, which hosts live and virtual events for top performing entrepreneurs to get them on podcasts and to learn from our keynote speakers and our massive network. So to learn more about that event, hit up podmax.co and sign up for the next event. They're happening each and every month. So as always, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with 2 to 3 of your friends to continue growing our community and to help others grow from the knowledge shared here and learned here on this podcast. And before we jump into the show, I'd like to share some of what our sponsors, partners, and good friends have to offer you.
Hello, this is Josh McCown, CEO of Viva May Hospitality and the beautiful Renault Resort Winery. I have to tell you, the secret's out, and the secret is On Air Brands. On Air Brands Creative Agency, which specializes in launching podcasts, transforming live events into live streaming events, and social media marketing soup to nuts. On Air Brands has changed the game. There'll never be a day from here forward when you and I and our companies don't need to be on the air. Every brand needs to be on the air, but so few know that. So it's great to work with a group that are ahead of the curve and to find a company that has been built on the core foundation of the future of marketing. If you're ready to broadcast your brand like they've done for my brands, take the next step and make a change that can transform your business. Reach out to On Air Brands today. That's onairbrands.com. Yes, onairbrands.com.
And welcome back to the Entrepreneur Circle. I am your most humbled and happy host, Eric Cabral. And with me today, I have a good friend who I have enjoyed getting to know, and hopefully you will enjoy getting to know here on the show as we talk to him about his life and all the businesses that he's involved in. Welcome to the show, Brian Beers.
Great. Thanks for having me, Eric.
Yeah. And I love the logo on your chest for your new podcast, Business with Beers, the microphone with a little bubbly in it.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, yep.
It's good. Did you come up with, or did you have somebody?
I used 99designs.com. Nice. So, yeah. You know, you submit what you want. People all over the world submit, you know, versions and their ideas, and you narrow it down and pick one. It's like, I don't know, $300 or something. It worked great.
Yeah, we do not get anything from 99 Designs, but if you, it's being endorsed by Brian Beers here on the show. I know Bigger Pockets likes to, I think they were a sponsor as well for that show.
Yeah.
But yeah, good stuff. So yeah, let's jump into a little bit about you, and then we'll jump into
all the crazy things that you do and we adore and want to learn from in terms of buying businesses, running businesses, franchises especially. So tell me a little bit about you and your history. Like, what was it that sparked this entrepreneurial sort of thing for you? Why aren't you just going to get a job somewhere?
Sure. Yeah, great. So I'm 33 years old. I have a beautiful wife. We've been together since high school. I've got two daughters. One's 4.5 years old. The other is 6 weeks old as of today.
And congratulations. So,
yeah, thanks. A great family life. As an entrepreneur, you know, I joined my family's business. So my dad is an entrepreneur, started in 1976, actually with his dad. So my dad was about in his early 20s at the time. In the Midas automotive repair business back then, it was like mufflers, was Midas muffler, you know, it was the 70s. And yeah, they had a great run. They built the business up. You know, it's changed over the years. And then, I don't know, 08, 09, you know, rough on a lot of businesses, you know, especially them. And, you know, ultimately they were looking to sell the business, you know, hold on to some real estate that they owned and get out. And then, you know, I joined in 2010, so right after I graduated college, and you know, brought some new energy back to the business. You know, kind of that spark and some new ideas and different ways of thinking, and you know, we kind of brought it back to life, and then we started growing it. And so, you know, 2016, we acquired our first two additional locations, and as of today, now we have 20 between Philadelphia and New Jersey.
Love
so
it.
You know, entrepreneurial spark. I mean, I've always ever wanted to work. You know, as a kid, I actually worked in the shops throughout high school. I had jobs working, actually doing some graphic design work, working at a music store. In college, I worked. I did some software development, iPhone apps and stuff, and I worked with a company there. And just always loved, you know, contributing, working in small businesses, coming up with ideas, you know, questioning the status quo, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that. So the entrepreneurial bug and running businesses was always in the family. Growing up, you always saw, you know, your grandfather and your father like running stuff and, you know, doing stuff. And it wasn't necessarily a job that they would hustle through and grind through because they had to, right? This was, I mean, they had to for this, but they owned it. They had some stake, skin in the game. More risk, obviously, as business owners. But I'm curious, Brian, about 2010, you know, when you graduated and you stepped in and you decided, okay, I'm going to help the family business. I'm going to learn about business here, boots on the ground. What were some of those new ideas that you referred to that you were bringing to the table?
Sure. So, you know, number one, I think it was some technology, you know, some basic things. Tracking sales, tracking different KPIs, you know, key performance indicators, looking at, you know, trying to find, hey, what are some lead metrics that we can look at that will help determine, you know, lag results, you know, sales and car count, the other things that we track. I think looking at the compensation plans and seeing, you know, were they motivating to people? You know, did they create the behaviors that, you know, we were looking to create? I think a lot of it is trying to figure out some of the culture aspect of making it a place that, you know, people want to come and they want to work at, and you know, not just a job. So, you know, over the years, you know, and this didn't really happen in 2010, but kind of over the years, we got into using Slack or some of these like business communication tools where, you know, it felt that like people at these individual stores felt like they're kind of on an island, right? They kind of saw the same people every day that were in those stores, and there wasn't much communication between the stores. So, you know, a lot of what we brought was ideas of, hey, let's get everybody communicating each other, get to know each other, you know, probably more in-person meetings, company parties, that kind of thing, just to make it more part of like a company and a community and in this family, not a bunch of like individual silos. And I think that those are the main things I'd say.
Yeah. All amazing stuff. All stuff that's relatively unique, because you wrapped up a ton of things in there that usually are multiple positions. You know, someone who's building culture or communication and compensation plans or introducing tech. Like, to me, that's, have you read the book Rocket Fuel? Gino Wickman's,
yep.
That whole thing.
Yeah, and
the VI. and traction and all that wonderful stuff. So in there, they talk about the visionary and they talk about the integrator, and it sounds like you have a bit of both. Would you say that, or do you lean more towards, you took the assessment, you're like more integrator type of personality?
Yeah, so it's changed over the years. You know, in the beginning, I was both for sure. And then in a couple years, 2015, my older brother joined the business, and you know, and now I'm almost 100% or 80%, I'd say, the visionary, and he's more the integrator. He's the one sticking everybody to, you know, kind of the process the right way. Where sometimes I, you know, a little more lax on some of those things, but I'm definitely the visionary, definitely the one, you know, I read a lot. I'm looking at other businesses, trying to figure out, you know, how they do things, and taking those things and say, hey, is there a way that we can apply that to our business? You know, I think learning from others is key. Learning across industries, competitors, to see, you know, what are they doing, how are they doing differently, how are they doing it the same, and you know, that's having this continual, you know, eye for improvement. You know, they talk about like Kaizen, you know, the Japanese kind of efficiency model of looking to constantly get better. And I think that's the approach, especially more lately, that we're looking at is, you know, how do we come be more efficient, you know, in the auto repair business? How do we get more cars through the bays? You know, how do we say yes to more people? And, you know, kind of having that as our big kind of picture of, you know, what the goal is. And then, you know, working obviously with me and him and all the managers to identify, you know, what's then the process we got to implement to be able to achieve these goals.
Yeah. I just wanted to highlight to the audience what the heck we're talking about when we mentioned visionary and integrator. And if you haven't read Rocket Fuel, I highly recommend that you do. But visionary, you know, there's two major components to running any successful business or making a business successful, is that identifying the visionary role, you know, and that's the person with all the ideas, the dreams, right? The culture aspect, all the feels, like I like to call, is usually the visionary. And this is the person that's always usually suffering from, hopefully, I imagine maybe Brian, from what I know of you, you suffer from this a little less, shiny object syndrome. Like, we always want to chase the next big idea and we get bored very quickly. Integrators are great because they understand their role is number two and they're okay with that, right? They don't need the guts or they don't need all the glory, but they want to implement the visionary's ideas and they want to make everything super efficient and they want to make everything, make sure it all works, and they want to hold not just their people accountable, but themselves. And they're really based on results and driven by the results and shining in all those aspects. So with all that being said, the visionary integrator role sounds like you and your brother have that locked, right? You guys understand and you're making you know, other Midas franchises super successful, taking your model and making it work and just expanding. Now, this is something that's super intriguing to me, bro, because it's like, I don't know how many, you tell me, Midas stores there are in the country. Like, how many are there?
It's about 1,000, 1,200, something in that range.
Yeah, that's insane. So say 1,200 stores, of which how many are on this side, Philly, New Jersey, you know, within the driving distance for you?
For me, probably 50, 60, something in that range.
So it's crazy because you found your niche, right? This is like a space where you can just go, you know, in the buying business sort of ecosystem or environment, there's so many different types. You know, there's coin ops and laundromats and this or that or game shops, whatever it is. But you can quickly identify, just looking at Midas companies, and the ones that are sort of aging out, that are the ones, whatever your criteria is, where they're like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. It's not successful. I don't know how to run it. I don't know how to make it better. I don't know how to grow it. You just come in and you say, hey, we'd love to take over, man. We figured it out. So tell us how that works. Like, you identify more mod. When is it time for you to say, okay, we're ready to buy another one because we fixed this one? Like, we just acquired our 19th one. It's time to move on to 20.
Yep, sure. So there's a couple things we're looking at. One is geographical footprint, right? So if we can find, because our models, we have, you know, stores and we have, you know, district managers who run, you know, the market, the Philadelphia market, the New Jersey market, you know, though obviously we have an office staff, we use a lot of virtual assistants that kind of support it. But if it's we can find an existing franchise, so another Midas that's within our geographical footprint, that is, I mean, I'll buy it at any time. There's not, you know, there's not have to be a certain number or certain anything. It's if it fits in and, you know, the numbers work on it, which I can talk about, you know, that's like, that's a slam dunk for us. Then the second thing we look at is not only existing, you know, Midas shops, but would be, you know, a competitor, a former competitor building. So for us, you know, it's got to be a certain square footage, certain size. You know, we don't do like three bays. You know, it's got to be at least, let's say, 6 to 10. So larger, you know, 4,000 to 7,000 square feet. But exists because generally like a Pep Boys customer or, you know, a Goodyear kind of customers most likely going to be, a Midas customer. And so we have a number of those that we've either acquired or are currently looking to acquire, which are, once again, it fit the footprint and then fit the model in terms of the size of the building, the location of the building, you know, it has to be a major retail and all that stuff. So that's the main thing we're looking at is does it fit and is it a good retail area? And if those two factors are good, then, you know, we're confident that we can make it work.
Well, where does database come into play? Is that part of your criteria too? Like the number, the amount of people they have in their database?
No, it doesn't matter at all. You know, we're looking at how many people live in the area. You know, we're big on direct mail. You know, we're big at, you know, at the end of the day, you live around the corner and you got a problem with your brakes and we're like convenient and we can say yes and we can do the job right. You know, we're going to get it.
Are you ready to invest in real estate but don't have the time or enough education to do it by yourself? Accountable Equity helps accredited investors who are looking for tax-advantaged investments. So anyone looking for a team of professionals who hold themselves accountable with theirs and your real estate investments, Accountable Equity is your boots-on-the-ground team. Their mission is to bring private offerings to their investors and their clients. With a team of committed and experienced investors themselves, Accountable Equity is always looking for partners to participate in alternative investments which extend beyond publicly traded equities like stocks. Accountable Equity makes alternative passive cash flow possible for more people than ever before in our economy. To find out more, visit AccountableEquity.com. That's AccountableEquity.com. Or look for them on LinkedIn or Facebook. That's AccountableEquity.com or Accountable Equity. That's Accountable Equity, your partner for true passive real estate investments.
So yeah, let's get our hands dirty here. Tell us a little bit about some of these strategies. Walk us through. I'm curious how the conversations go with a mom and pop Midas, store where you identified them as like someone that just is interested, very interested in letting it go and handing you the reins. So,
yep. Yeah. So the first thing for us is creating a relationship, right? People buy from people they like. And so, you know, I've made it a point to be, you know, well known and, you know, well liked in terms of helping others. You know, I contribute to hosting calls of other dealers to talk about best practices and challenges. You know, I'm open to sharing anything that we do with anybody. You know, I believe, and you know, if as much as we give out, kind of we get back. And so that's the number one thing. People buy from people they like. People sell then to people they like. Right? They don't like you. They don't trust you. They don't want to do business with you. So that's number one. So I create relationships pretty much with as many people in the ecosystem. Both in Midas and once again, local, maybe mom and pop competitors too. It doesn't necessarily have to be, similar strategies. And then from there, we're looking at kind of, you know, valuations. You know, we'll buy, you know, I think a lot of small businesses trade at somewhere around 2.5 times, you know, owner cash flow, of whatever they're currently doing. And so, you know, if it's cash flowing to the owner, let's say $100,000 a year, you know, $250,000 is roughly what we think it would be worth. We've paid less than that. I've paid 1x earnings. I've paid more than that, depending. We look at how involved is the owner, right? If the owner runs the business day to day, like they are the manager, they're the customer facing person, you know, to us, that business is less valuable because, you know, we're gonna have to replace that person with, you know, a manager that we hire, and they're not gonna be as good as the owner. At least I hope not, right? So, the less involved they are in running the business, the better in our eyes, right? We're going to look at what do they do? Like, what marketing do they do? What do their operations look like? What are they staffed? Because if those are our key things, right? We know how to market. We know how to staff the stores. We know how to run the processes. You know, so the you know, in our minds, the weaker they are in those three things, right, the bigger growth opportunity that we're going to see. Now, if they do really good marketing, they have really good operations, they have all the staff, and they still, or maybe they're doing great, right? It's just to us, then the upward potential maybe isn't as great. So we look at that. We look at capital investments, right? Do we have to, put a new roof on the building? Do we have to buy a bunch of equipment? Or is it more turnkey, ready to go? You know, all these things kind of affect not only, I mean, for us automotive, but any business that someone's looking to buy. We then look at the historical performance, right? And, you know, luckily, and at least in the Midas system, numbers are shared. We know, like, you know, how it did 10 years ago. We know how it did last week. And so then we can compare that. And then finally, I'm going to look at what we think it can do, right? Based on our averages, kind of our model. You know, then it comes down to our cash on cash return. You know, we look at buying it kind of as an investment, right? Instead of taking this money and investing in real estate or stocks or, you know, whatever, we put it back in the business, right? Which I think you can get the best possible returns, but it takes work, right? It's not passive at all. You know, it takes work, it takes risk. You could lose it all. So we look at the cash on cash, and our goal, which we've been more than successful at, is 100% cash on cash return in the first year. And so, you know, if I'm going to put $50,000 down to buy the business, right, I expect that we're going to get all $50,000 back in that first 12 months. And so then at that point, we have no kind of additional money into it. Ideally, the money generated from that location, this new money, is not only paying down the debt, potentially to the seller or to the bank, but it's also additional, you know, cash flow to us. And so in terms of, like, when we look at the valuation, those are the things that I look at.
I love all that, brother. So good, you know, as far as the strategy and the model and all the criteria that you sort of comb through from a high level, which is great. So paint a scenario. I'm going to paint a scenario and then, like, place you in, you're sitting down, you've got the relationship with Jim. You know, he owns one or two stores, and you're like, hey, you know, Jim, we've been talking for years. We're good friends, love our barbecues. Tell us a little bit about some of the strategies regarding financing.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So a couple different ways you can buy it, right? I see, you know, four ways, but, you know, the three that I come to top of mind, cash, right? So you can just write him a check and hands you the keys. It's kind of all done. Generally, you know, when someone has kind of a more urgent need to get out, and it's generally a lower price from our experience, you know, I bought them at 1x earnings, you know, made 85 grand a year and I paid 85 or, you know, whatever it was. So that was a super good deal for us. Right. And so that's one way, but there's gotta be, like, some pain that they just want to, like, just get out. Right. Number two is bank financing, right? So you could go to a bank, get an SBA, you know, backed loan. You know, the benefits are, you know, it's 10% down, kind of all in with all the fees. But, you know, it's a lot of work. They're going to want P&Ls. They're going to want tax returns from the seller. Like, the seller has to be willing to kind of deal with all that. You're going to have to put up collateral, like, and they don't really count the assets of the business. Like, they discount it. So chances are you're putting up your personal house and some other potential collateral to get up to whatever their standards are. And it takes a lot of time. So, but it's a good option as well. Then the third, which is kind of our favorite, is seller financing. And so in this model, the seller then becomes the bank. So we put a down payment on, and then every month we're making payments to him, both principal and interest. And in this model, like, everything is negotiable, right? The purchase price, obviously, the interest that we're going to pay, the terms, the amortization of the payments, like, is there going to be a balloon? I mean, everything on a traditional note is negotiable. And so when I sit down with that guy, it's going to be talking to him about what his goals are, what his timeline is, and then we usually talk on price in terms of, at least from my experience, amount of money I'm going to pay down and then how much money I'm going to pay per month, instead of, you know, because it keeps it simple of, hey, I'll pay you, I don't know, $50,000 down and $3,000 a month for X amount of months, right? And then later we'll kind of, it's a starting point. And then later we can get into what's the price, what's the interest rate, what's the amortization, all these complicated things that at the end of the day, in most people's minds, they're looking at how much money I'm going to get up front and how much am I going to get per month. So yeah, that's how we start the conversation.
I love that. I love seller financing, you know, creative financing, figuring out ways to make the deal work. Can you Can you tell us a little bit about some of the struggles in terms of the mindset of the seller? You know, how many of them are like, is this illegal? Or, you know, how much of that do you have to educate? How much education is involved?
I mean, there's not a ton, but a lot of people aren't aware of it, number one. You know, I've talked to a number of people that just were like, well, I can do that. Like, it's usually more positive interest than there is negative interest on it. And then we'll kind of go through them, what the benefits to them are, right? Number one is they could get a higher price, right? Or two different ways. One, they could get a higher price. So then the bank would approve because the bank's got to look at, you know, historical performance and debt coverage ratios and all these things. And, you know, maybe we are willing to pay a higher price because we know there's this good potential versus what the bank thinks that it's, you know, worth. Number two, it could be unprofitable, right? The thing could make no money and it's the only way that the seller can sell it because no bank is going to loan you money on something that doesn't make any money. They can earn additional money through interest, right? So they're loaning you money. So instead of paying the bank interest, you're going to pay the seller interest, which is a benefit. And then finally, for the seller, they get to defer taxes. So instead of paying all their capital gains in one shot, they get to kind of spread out those capital gains tax payments over the length that they get paid from you. And in essence, the interest that you're going to pay them covers kind of all their tax payments. So, you know, we kind of walk through those things kind of at a high level. There's usually interest in it. And then we go about, you know, talking about payment structures and going from there.
Yeah, I love that. So the majority of your experience is, you know, within the franchise world, right? So it's very much, you know, business ownership, but at a different sort of experience and level versus those who start from the ground up, right? Like from nothing, like I did. And there's pros and cons to that. Can you talk about some of what you believe are the pros and cons of like doing it that way versus like just building
franchising versus going independent? Sure. Yeah.
Or starting something from completely from scratch.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So a couple different ways we've looked at this. Number one, starting from scratch. I mean, we've opened stores from zero where, you know, it was a dormant shop and we went in there, we put up the Midas banners, we spent all the money on the lifts, we have to advertise, right? Day one, you know, we're sitting around waiting for the phone to ring, right? And there's definitely risks in that, but then, you know, you're also getting a better deal. You know, our costs out of pocket is the equipment. And, you know, we're working on a deal now that we're going to open in, July 1st here, where it's a competitor that went out. We just took over the lease and we got 3 months, no rent. So we're going to have no rent for 3 months. And we bought all the equipment for like $35,000. So we're going to open this thing day one with $35,000 out of pocket. You know, we should do pretty well there. It's on a major street in the city. And so, you know, there's risk, but then there's also these opportunities that you can get. And this thing was off market. You know, we learned about it through interviewing some people who said the location was closing. You know, we worked with some brokers to figure out the landlord and just kind of backdoored ourselves into this. And so, you know, while there's risks, there's definitely some better opportunities I think you can have than once someone's ready to sell and, you know, you're getting into multiples of cash flow and all these things. In terms of kind of franchising versus non, I mean, we're lucky, at least in the Midas business, where, you know, we operate our own company. We run our shops the way we want to run them. You know, we carry a name. So we kind of have the best of both worlds with the marketing and the national support. But at the end of the day, you know, I run it how we want to run it. And so not every franchise is like that. Some, you know, you run a Chick-fil-A, you know, it's a Chick-fil-A. It's not, you know, Brian's Chick-fil-A. And so, you know, it kind of depends on what you're looking for in there with the range of flexibility that franchising, you know, can provide somebody.
Yeah, I think that from my understanding, and thanks for clarifying, there are certain franchises that give you, you know, allowances and, you know, free reign over certain things. They provide you with the support, like you said, with marketing and branding. And but in terms of like running the actual business, do they give you at least a framework and like, hey, you don't have to file this, but this is what we see works. Or you can just like, hey, you could just scrap all that and say, we're just going to do our own thing.
Yeah. So at least in ours, there's a framework of the type of work that we do. You know, in the Midas world, we don't do body work, right? We don't do like accessories like car stereos and remote starts and stuff.
But there are those that do, you're saying?
Yep. No, no, we don't. We don't do any of that.
No, but I mean, right? Nobody does. Midas, nope. No, Midas locations. Nope.
Not at least. I mean, once in a while, maybe throw a bumper on a car, but like, you know, our business is tires and suspension and oil changes and just total car care in terms of repair work. And so, you know, there's guidelines there, but in terms of, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that, maybe not as much as some other franchises.
Yeah. That's awesome, brother. So yeah, tell us what is currently happening. I know you just picked up your 20th location.
Yep. July 1st will open the 20th.
Any day now. Congratulations. But then what's sort of the plan for the rest of the year and beyond?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to continue to grow. We've got other ones we're looking at, you know, in these two markets that are either current franchises or, like I said, not independents that we're looking to ideally purchase the real estate and, you know, then operate the business. That's kind of that's the best if possible, because then we're the landlord. You get some great tax benefits and all that.
Yeah, follow what Ray Kroc set up
and,
for us.
Because ultimately, you know, that's our goal, is we're going to build this thing up. And then, you know, one day, you know, my brother and I, we're going to want to sell and hold on to all the real estate and, you know, collect that into our future. And so,
brilliant.
You know, that's our plan. And you know, we got a lot of work to do within our own stores of growing same store sales. You know, a lot of times I'm focused on the acquisitions and growing, you know, kind of rooftops. But then, you know, we look at what we could be doing out of ours, and I could double or triple or quadruple our business just with what we already got. So it's kind of a combination there of, you know, growing where it makes sense, but then also, you know, having appreciation for what we got. So,
yeah. That was awesome, brother. Thanks for sharing. I think that was a mini MBA for anyone who wants to start a franchise or get to know a little bit about how to run those businesses and to grow those businesses. Just a wealth of just info there, which is amazing. I want to ask a little bit now and move on to sort of the Beers household. Like, what's going on? I know the family's growing. Tell us about all the sort of exciting things that are sort of happening in your personal life here.
Yeah. So, like I said, I've got a 6-week-old daughter who was born at the end of April.
So you haven't had any sleep. No, I'm talking to Brian on like 5 hours of sleep.
Yep. And neither is my wife. You know, she's a trooper with, you know, taking care of her. And so, it's great. And, you know, I have a 4.5-year-old daughter who, you know, she's funny and she's got a great memory, and we're working, teaching her business. You know, she negotiates everything. Negotiates bedtime, negotiates, you know, how many bites of chicken she has to eat before she gets French fries. And anyway, it's...
I mean, kids are the best salesmen.
She's a lot of fun.
Like, they have inherently in them, like, sales strategies and tactics in their head that's just to convince us to do whatever it is they want us to do. It's amazing to watch.
Yep. And especially for somebody so young, it's like she's like 4 steps ahead of me thinking about stuff. And
especially girls, anyway. Yeah.
Yep. So that's fun.
So I know you and I are in a mastermind together called GoldBundance, and then there's also a lot of other cool things. What are some of those things that you were involved in or have a passion for outside of, you know, sort of direct to the business?
Yeah. So yeah, GoldBundance. I joined beginning of last year, 2020, and you know, it's been amazing for me. I think just surrounding myself with other entrepreneurs who think, you know, similar and sometimes completely different, which opens your mind to questioning things. And like, there's all these, you know, you kind of have this assumption of how the world works, and then you meet these people who are doing completely different things, you know, questioning like everything in terms of how they buy things, how they run things, how they get financing that you didn't think was possible. And so it's been a great learning experience, you know, for me. And, you know, I try to contribute as much as I can, you know, kind of back to the community. So it's been great, you know, create friendships from it, and you know, haven't been able to do too many in person events, but with COVID and you know my daughter, but we're hoping you know, once everything clears up, we'll be meeting in person and going from there.
Yeah, I'm hoping to go to the one in Steamboat in the coming months. I think it's October, maybe, or no, it's August. I'm sorry, it's August. So that is coming up soon. So I don't know if you plan on going, but I think we're going to be there. It's going to be good, because like you, I haven't gone to any events since last year. So I'm going to throw a couple of random questions that I like to call quick hits from the hip. Let's see how you fare, throw you in the deep end, and we'll take it from there. So let me know, or let the audience know, what's the strangest thing you ever ate in your life?
Oh boy, strangest thing I ever ate. I think it was an Israeli restaurant in Philadelphia once, and it was this thing where they just bring food out. It was a big group of people, and they just bring food out, and then you have no idea what you're eating. And I want to say it was a brain of some sort, and I said it. You don't know what you're eating. You're just enjoying it, and luckily the portions were small enough that it was fine. But
did they tell you, or you suspected that it was brie?
It's a combination of both, I guess. a lot of people, loud room, plates passing around,
Oh man, it reminds me of, I don't know if you're Indiana Jones fan, but I think it was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, the second one where, I forgot what country they were in, but they brought out all these weird meals. And one of them was in a goblet, a chalice, were monkey heads. And everyone got a monkey head. There's like a dozen people at the table. And then somebody came and grabbed the top hair and pulled off the cap, and it was like a cut. And then like you had to eat the brain right out of the monkey's head.
it wasn't that visual.
Let's see. So yeah. What business or life is one of the favorite projects that you've worked on?
Business or life favorite projects.
Could have whittled something, something that you're building in your business. But I mean, like hobbies.
Yeah, sure. I'll do one. This was years ago. I was in high school, and I was going, I was on like the weekends down to this guy, and I was doing software, and we were helping build this music website. It was called Bits and Watts. And the idea was like, at the time, my wife and I, we wanted to go see local music, and it was trying to figure out who are the local bands playing at all these like different bars around. And the process before was like, you had to go to each like bar's website, look at the calendar, and then like link from the calendar to the, like that artist's page, MySpace or whatever it was at the time. And to see if you liked the music or not, cause you didn't know any of the names. And so, we had built this site that would kind of like a Pandora-esque, like where artists would then submit their music. We'd get the vendors, we'd get the venues to have, we'd support their calendar. And then, whenever an artist signed up, we'd feed in their music. And so you could just go to this one thing. You could look at the calendar this weekend. Here's all the venues. You could click on it and hear the music, live streamed from the website. And so, we thought it was pretty cool. We were really proud of it. Then I went off to college and just like, it never really went anywhere, but still think it's a great idea. And, for people who like live and local music and kind of a one-stop shop for listening to the artists, right? Not just knowing the names, but
yeah, it's a great idea. All these tools are in place now to sort of live stream, or hundreds of people have iPhones in the crowd and just like going live. But that's a cool idea, man. Considering the time, it was
10 years ago.
Yeah,
and we got it. We had it built. We had venues on it. We had artists on it. It's just
is it still up? Bits and Watts?
Nah. But anyway, it was. That was fun at the time.
I'm gonna ask you this last one, and then we'll wrap here, brother, and we'll get you back into your business and your life. If you had to compete in the Olympic Games, my friend, what sport would you compete in?
Oh, that's a good one. Summer or winter?
Whatever you want.
I used to be very good at shuffleboard. So I don't know if that's an Olympic sport, but that is what I would
curling
attempt
maybe?
To play. Yeah, curling.
I love shuffleboard. Has a connection to like being retired or old. But yeah, you're right, man. It's fun.
Yeah, I learned how to. It was, my grandparents lived in Florida, and we'd shuffleboard. And then we had a tabletop version that you could play in bars and stuff.
Yeah, and so, it's hard to get those in a room. They're so freaking long.
Yeah, I bought one and we put it in my basement and had to like, we had this little window. And we were able to like, luckily, the height, just slid it right in like 12 feet of it or whatever it was.
Every time I see a shuffleboard in a house, I'm like, I look at the doors and the corners. I'm like, how did you get that in here? Because I always wanted one. And that's like the struggle, right? The basements or you is where you would think it belongs, like you said. And then
yeah, your wife doesn't want it in the living room or dining room.
Exactly. But yeah, good stuff, brother. I appreciate you and your friendship. And this was great, man, getting to know a little bit more about Brian Beers and all the things that you're doing, brother. How can people reach out if they want to know a little bit more about what you're doing and connect?
Sure. Yeah. You could check out first my podcast, Business with Beers, yes. You mentioned earlier.
Congrats.
You know, I launched it in February and, you know, it's been great. I bring on other business owners, entrepreneurs. We talk about investing in people and process technology. It's a great learning experience for me just to talk to people, see how they think. I mean, similar to you, like the, you know, it's the relationships that you create through it is kind of the best part. And so, you know, it's on Apple, Spotify, it's everywhere. Business with Beers at Instagram or on Facebook, same handle. Or they can go to brianbeers.com. It has all the links and
awesome.
That'd be the best way.
Love it. Love it, brother. And congrats on everything you're doing and on life. And I'll talk to you soon, brother.
Great. Thanks, Eric.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.